Oh, that's Juancho Sanchez, master conguero and arranger and band leader with Conga Blue. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday, June the 19th, and it is open forum on Lead Stories, where you take the conversation wherever you want it to go at 888-874-4888. I've got to tell you, I have been just absolutely riveted by the feedback I've been getting, the emails and the communications. Fantastic. Really profound thoughts, and I really, really do enjoy getting that kind of feedback. It is not important whether people agree or disagree with the things that I say. It's great. I like the idea that you make your case. You make your case, and that is the essence of this kind of communication. Make your case. You certainly are entitled to an opinion. Everybody is. But I appreciate the walk that you take toward your conclusions or toward your opinions. That is the essence of the whole thing. That's the holy grail right there. Let me appreciate how you get to where you are in terms of what it is you're thinking about any particular subject. And if we do that, then we are doing really good work. That is itself a political education. Nobody has a monopoly on being right, except for certain people in public service. Some people do have a monopoly on being wrong. But it is important simply to state your case within a cogent argument. So let's hear your arguments today about anything that you're thinking. So many things are in the news, but this is my time to be the traffic cop to facilitate information as opposed to dominating the conversation. 888-874-4888. And as you call, again, keep in mind, I'm interested in evidence that you have invested some degree of thought and research and considered opinions in what it is you're thinking. I like that. I really do like that. Of course, we've been talking about the Edward Snowden. He's been dominating the conversation lately. Haven't seen anything in the news today. But it is, of course, causing lots of ripple effects throughout the government and throughout America, really. People are thinking about these issues that have come to the fore. And the primary one is, you know, the secret court and whether it should continue to be secret. What is it that they are adjudicating? And how are they interpreting the law? Well, we talked about that with the representative from the ACLU, who was, in fact, participant in the drawing up of the legal papers the ACLU filed against the government, looking for exactly that. How is the law being interpreted? Why is the court secret? What is it doing? Why aren't members of Congress who are overseeing this court and members of the judiciary also overseeing this court, why aren't they talking? What is it that prohibits them from being open about the court? These are very important questions. But there are proscriptions, and it's a matter of how we deal with them. What is the role of the citizen? And this was what the essential question of Snowden's actions actually precipitated a discussion on that. What is the role of a citizen? And in the context of what we understand our governmental system to be, does he have equal standing, greater standing than others? Does he have a right to do what he's doing? Okay, we have quite a few. Jerry from Connecticut, you are the first. Thank you for joining
Hi
us
there,
today.
Patrice.
Hello.
One subject I don't understand. We've been talking about immigration on a number of channels and all over the place, but they never talk about the unemployed in this country, or the unemployable, or those vets that are 1 million living homelessly. Why isn't that the first concern? And they say, oh, they don't take jobs in America. Well, I interviewed some of these people, and they took jobs that my wife used to be able to do, and jobs that I used to be able to do. But nobody has any concern that they either are forcing down the wages, or they're not taking the concerns of African Americans that have been unemployable because of the competition, poor whites and even Hispanics who have been born here that have to go head to head against these people who come in and are underpricing them.
Okay, well, what is your opinion of it?
My opinion is that the first concern should be Americans. I mean, we're in a depression. We should take care of Americans first. I have nothing against other people around the world, but our first concern is our own people, not trying to bring in 30 million more people and their parents and their children and whatever once they become a legitimate, so that they can go head to head and the wages are forced down and there are less jobs available for the general public.
Well, it's not 30 million. Actually, the number is more like 11.5 million.
But I
understand your point. Let's say, what do you think, therefore, should they just stop the whole process of immigration, just shut it down until this first piece of business could be done? Is that what you're thinking?
I think that's the first. Let's face it, you'd first take care of your own first. I mean, I can't see a million vets who can't find jobs. Now, they're not all in a situation where they could not find a job if you got them back on their feet. And the same thing goes with African Americans. The same thing goes with poor whites. I mean, one of the reasons we don't have enough tax revenue is because we force down wages to their such an extent, and these people become dependents rather than tax producers. I mean, our first concern is our own nation, our own people. We can't be a magnet to these people because we can't support a billion or whatever would want to come in here. And I dispute the figure because I reviewed some of my old tapes, my old videotapes, and they said it was 11, 12 million back in 1990-something, and there was a half million every year coming in addition to that. So if you add that up, that means there's got to be closer to 30 million people here if those figures are correct. They always have kept a stagnant figure for the last 12 or 13 years, so that figure must be totally bogus.
Well, I question the figures too, although, of course, they never report the numbers deported, and it's a significant number. A significant number of people are deported every year who are found to be either here illegally or they are found to have committed crimes while here and therefore become deportable. Now, here's the thing. In your view, do you believe that, let's say, the bulk of the jobs, let's say a number of jobs, huge number of jobs, are in the agricultural sector, let's say? Is it your opinion that Americans really want these jobs?
No, that's not true. Look, I'll give you one example. I worked at Danbury. I'll even name a specific place, Danbury Fair Mall. I worked there. Not because I wanted to do this job, because they had insurance, and I had insurance for my wife, and that I did the job. I did a maintenance job there in the building.
Mm-hmm.
80 or 90% of the people were through bogus documentation. They openly said that in the cafeteria when I sat with these people. They finally found out. It became a major issue right in the newspaper when they found out that there was somebody in there producing false papers. So you can't say Americans are not willing to do the jobs. If they can get insurance and it's at least a livable wage, you can't say that. This is a bogus argument. They've infiltrated every type of business, and I can give other examples of that. For example, in my area, there are people who basically take care of people at home. They basically infiltrated that area. I used to have, mm-hmm. my wife used to have a cleaning business for small businesses around here, that's been head-to-head against illegals. I mean, it goes on and on. So it's not just the agricultural thing. We're really, you know, when you're taking the lower middle classes, we're abandoning the lower middle classes and those who just barely scrape on, who don't have that opportunity to still get those upper-level jobs, even if they have the education, because they don't have it.
Well, Jerry, you're making a very strong point, and I understand the point. I'm an immigrant, as you know. I'm an immigrant citizen. But the thing is this. The way that the country has formulated much of its official policies in many areas is just so short-sighted, and it's tied to the political flavor of the month or the year, as opposed to a comprehensive, sensible plan about how a nation builds itself and moves forward, irrespective of who would be president in the next 4 years. Other countries take a far more sensible approach to immigration, and they tie it into the vision of the country 20, 30, 50 years down the line. So that it is not done in, you know, four-year spurts. The United States has not really formulated a comprehensive and sensible immigration plan for 30 years, which is unbelievable. And now the people who are making immigration policies, the people who are influencing immigration policies, are the people with the money, such as the high-tech areas, where, again, the emphasis is let us get what we want and, you know, we'll figure out the rest, depending on who contributes the most money to the political process. That's who's making immigration policy. So I understand your point, and you're quite correct to be concerned about it, because this is exactly where the rubber meets the road. The average person is seeing this, and logical conclusions are drawn. Why should we basically flood a market when there are people here looking for jobs? It will cause this exact problem that you're highlighting. I talked about it here. It causes a huge problem, and people are right to protest against it. It is short-sighted immigration policy, absolutely short-sighted immigration policy, and tied really to the political flavor of the month. But you make a very strong point, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling.
I just wanted to let you know, I'm not against immigrants. My wife is an immigrant, but it's got to be a reasonable policy for all people.
Absolutely. I understand that, and I agree. Thank you. Thanks so much. Sean from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hey, Patrice.
Hello.
Yes, Holly, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Okay, you're talking about what the individual has to do. Well, first of all, the individual has to be informed. If the individuals are not informed, they can't really make the right decisions. And right now, everything is being done in secret. And so how is the individual supposed to make a decision if everything is being kept for them? I mean, you have this whole national security state, and everything is in secret, so nobody knows what's going on there. So how do we do this?
Well, that's what...
No, I'm asking you.
No, I'm saying that's a question that needs to be raised in Congress, with the people in Congress.
Yeah, but Congress doesn't really respond to what the people
No,
want.
You see, you can't have it both ways. If there has to be a strong piece of evidence that the people have decided to confront Congress about it and punish... I mean, this is the whole point. If you elect a party or a president or a congressperson or a senator, and they're not doing what they're supposed to do, then they're supposed to be punished for it. I don't understand why people would say, well, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Well, yeah, well, you haven't registered your voice. And you certainly haven't delivered swift and certain punishment for abrogating a duty. We don't have enough evidence of that. people need to first at least register the opinion and make sure that people understand that you're serious. If we have an objection to the secrecy of government, but we continue to have the same government that we have problems with secrecy about, then what do we do? You see, we can't have it both ways.
Oh, it's a dilemma. But the point is, the government...
But it's not a dilemma. I don't see it as a dilemma. I see it as, you know, serious. Look at what's going on in Brazil, all right? The people are in the streets by the hundreds of thousands in Brazil over one thing. And that, you know how that started? A 20-cent increase in bus fare. Regular poor people in a country where the average salary is about between five and ten dollars a day, a 20-cent increase in bus fare is tremendous. They were the ones who said, we're not going to tolerate this. They are in the streets by the hundreds of thousands in Brazil. And guess what? The point has been made. So Americans want comfort. The political system is wrong. It's out of kilter. But we don't want the discomfort of going into the streets and taking our fight where the fight belongs. We want to remain in our comfort zone and still be upset about the fact that things are not going the way they ought to go. I have said here, the African-American community, for example, complaining all the time, but voting for the Democratic Party all the time. Now, you can't have it both ways. If the Democratic Party is offending you by doing absolutely nothing in your interests, you punish the Democratic Party. Absolutely, ruthlessly punish the party. Get out of it. Leave it. Go someplace else. Form another party. Find someplace else to go to invest your political votes. But we keep repeating this cycle. I mean, this cycle of self-inflicted wounds. You know, we support the party and then we complain, oh, they're not doing it. Well, then, I mean, what, it's not a dilemma. It is that we have a psychological problem.
Well, the thing is, what you're saying is all geared according to the election cycle, but these problems are happening every day, and people have to deal with these things every day. So we can't just do this every 2 years, and, you know, and even though and our vote is not even, maybe not even counted properly, and we have candidates we don't even want, and the whole system.
But the thing is, we have these things, and you're right. You're right to point out the problems. I'm saying that the problems also are solvable, but we refuse to solve them. Next year is midterm elections. We're only really months away from midterm elections. And guess what? We will see a whole new group of useless candidates and some of the same old faces being elected to continue the cycle of, you know, obstinacy to the people's needs. The same people who are angry today will be electing the same lame people tomorrow.
Yeah, but
thanks,
John. I don't see any slate of alternative candidates stepping up and saying, you know, here I am.
You have to seek them out, and you have to decide. It's not about the candidates anymore. It's probably about the party. So if you vote Republican and the Republicans don't look like they're doing anything, get out of the Republican Party and say, I'm no longer with this. This is a useless party. If you vote Democrat and the Democrats are not delivering, you punish the party. That's what you do. Everybody else gets the message, whether in Bulgaria or Brazil. When the system fails, you confront the system that fails and you change it. You can't continue to endorse failure. after a while, you know, you have to face the question, is there something not so much wrong with the party, but maybe something is wrong with me and you for continuing the cycle? Thank you so much, Sean, for calling. We have Roman, I suppose, from Arkansas. Roman, is it?
Yes, it's Roman. Thank you. And thank you,
Roman,
for the
thank
opportunity
you.
To listen and hear the agony of the public at large and your tempered optimism. It's encouraging. And it's extremely vital, you know. Unfortunately, history repeats itself. And because history repeats itself, the effect upon current issues and the need for those solutions will often be found in the history of very similar matters. And so because that awareness came to me, I pointedly decided to select a current event and focus solely on that. And in doing so, many years ago, I caused myself two major things. Number one, live a life close to the Lord Jesus Christ, number one. Number two, separate myself from party politics and view the rule book. Look at the historic line that brought us to where we are as a constitutional republic and try to learn what are the tools to confront these dysfunctional congressional occupiers of the people's capital in D.C., where dysfunctionality is great. It is at beyond an egregious level, and it is more similar to a cankered, cancerous sore than the vitality that the republic was intended to be. The people's greatest tool prior to exercising public posturing in the streets is the petition for redress. And the founders put in place this petition process based on the Common Law Bill of Particulars, whereby the people can make this presentment to the elected. And there is a due process historically documented when those that have been so-called elected fail to respond to the petitioners, meaning the American people, there is a cause of corrective action to address the cause of their concern and unhappiness. Sadly, collectively, and myself included, I'm in the mirror looking at myself, and I'm one of the public at large that fail to do the many, many things that we should be doing collectively to hold these scoundrels accountable. And I tend to agree with you, until we get to that place, we will continue to see a reoccurrence of these illnesses within our elected officials.
Well, Roman. I take your contribution as a statement today and something that people should ponder. Thank you so much for contributing it. All right, Sarah from Dallas. Hello?
Hello?
Sarah. Yes, you're on the air, Sarah.
Oh, sorry, Utrecht. Greetings to you and greetings to the audience.
Thank you.
Utrecht, I'm going to say two things really quick. I had an opportunity to go back and listen to the show earlier this morning, from the ones from this week, and a few things that came across my attention, and I know I'm sometimes guilty of it, and sometimes I have a faulty phone, but we need to be a bit respectful of you as the host when you're speaking and you're trying to make a point. We just need to hold back and not try and overtalk you or basically run you over in our zeal in order to put out information that we feel is of relevance. So that is just something I need to put out here for the audience, because I was listening to the show on yesterday, and it was very, very impolite. The last two callers, they were very, very impolite in the way how they were handling you as if though they were the host of the show and not allow you time to express yourself.
Well, you know, thank you for this, but, you know, I do take into consideration sometimes there's a lag, you know, there's a lag between depending on where people are, there's a kind of overlap of time. So it sounds like we are talking over each other. And I also take into consideration some people calling may have difficulty with hearing. And
okay.
it's something that I take into consideration. So I don't think they're meaning to be impolite. I just think sometimes we have a problem. Sometimes you could tell that people are just impolite, but sometimes it is a matter that there's a gap, a phone gap, and sometimes I take into consideration people have hearing issues.
Okay, because I know sometimes I do that when I have my phone on speaker, and I'm only could hear myself alone and not hear when the host is trying to make a point. So that is one reason why I use a headset, so that I can effectively communicate and not run people over when they're trying to make their point. But to get back to what you, the topic I was going to cover on today is, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the interview the president did with Charlie Rose. And
yes.
It was a blatant and bold-faced lie, what he was telling Charlie Rose in regards to the situation with the Syria and what's going on over there. This rule, this playbook has played so many times, and the American public, they seem to be some or the other fooled and bamboozled with what's going on. And to what the caller was saying about the political system, we need a second political party in this country. We don't need a third party. We need a second. Because to quote the late author Gore Vidal, we have a we only have one party, because the Democrats and the Republicans are one. Their ideology are the same. So if we get a second party in here, maybe then you can get something done. Because as you were stating with the court system, the secret court, here it is that we supposedly elect people into office to represent us, because we can, the 300 and some million of us, can at all go to D.C. and present our cases. And these people, the majority of them are lawyers, business people. They have sound judgment. And you're going to tell me that you're going to have to collect a select few in order to sit in on a secret court in order for them to make a decision as to who is a terrorist, who is a criminal, and whose number is up to date, that we need to go ahead and take them out. This sounds like the mafia working in Washington, D.C. This don't sound like this is supposed to be a Republican or a democratically running office, whereby people get a chance to come before a judiciary system, present their cases, hear arguments and counter-arguments as to why it is they should not be killed. But somebody is sitting up there in some room with a list, and they're checking it twice, and they're plucking people off and saying, okay, well, you know what? Today is not going to be your lucky day. This is what is going on up there.
And the American I agree. What should concern us is, irrespective of party affiliation, in terms of who is president or who's in Congress, who's sitting on which committees, the status remains decidedly quo. So it must mean that there's got to be a different way to approach this problem. I was asking questions about the secret court of the police commissioner of the city of New York more than 20 years ago. And didn't get answers then. So it is a system organized to insulate itself and isolate itself from the people, not government by the people for the people, but government insulated against and isolated from the people.
Exactly, Utrecht. You know, this is the same fascist state dictatorship that they are running here, that they're talking about these so-called banana republics, as they term those countries in Central and Latin America, where people are going in at night and pulling people out of their houses and putting them before firing squads and killing them. The United States is doing a modern-day version now. They are sending in drones or sending in people on the streets, potentially, to work as hitmen, because what they are running in Syria right now in arming rebels, because don't forget, people, the American public need to keep in mind that these so-called rebels that they are talking about arming in Syria, they are mercenaries. They're not even Syrians. They're coming from all over the Gulf states, to include Europe, some of them even from the Americas, because if you remember, a couple of Americans got killed who were rebels who got killed in Syria. So it's a whole mishmash of mercenaries from all over the globe that are in there that they are arming, and they're fighting. So these people are not fighting for the Syrian government. These people are fighting for big corporations in order to get Al-Assad out of the way so that they can consolidate that area and then move on into Iran. That is all that they're trying to do. This has nothing to do with humanitarian. It has nothing to do with bringing so-called democracy, helping women and children, and all of the usual lies that the president was on TV trying to say, you know, couldn't even do it with a straight face. All the blinking and not looking straight you in the face, you know, the stuttering. You can always tell when a person is lying because their body language tells you that they don't even believe the propaganda that he was putting out.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Much to think about today.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your call. This is why we have this forum, so that people can express their views. And this is great. This is exactly what we ought to be doing. Thank you so much. Harvey from Berkeley, you up next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, you chief.
Hello.
Thank you for the show.
Thank you. You make the show. That's why it's so good.
Well, I'm glad you're giving me a turn along with everybody else. I'm into a gentler, more loving world for us and our children. Last time I called you, I talked about a guaranteed national income, and that was first floated by President Eisenhower and President Nixon, but it wasn't the right time. And I suggested that to a friend of mine, and he said, "Well, the name won't work. Guaranteed national income." He suggested the name should be Guaranteed Standard of Living. Guaranteed Standard of Living. And the Guaranteed Standard of Living would ensure people got food and shelter, and it would also help to reduce crime, and it would reduce medical costs for the government. So I think that this program can almost pay for itself. But this is because of the coming of the robots, the artificial intelligence, and the 3D printers. This is not about laziness on our part anymore. Robots will be able to do the work of seven. They don't sleep. They don't want health insurance. They don't go on vacations. They don't talk about retirement. Artificial intelligence, it's going to be like a friend. It's going to be so good, it'll feel like a friend. And 3D printers, well, that's the factory in your house. So between those three, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen right away, but it's coming. It's coming, and I think that's why we have to start working on a guaranteed standard of living. And let me give you one instance where this is applicable. In China, there's a company called Foxconn. They're actually a Korean company, and they manufacture all the Apple products in China. And they manufacture in China because that's where the cheapest labor is. But what happened is that their work is so difficult and so repetitive that people were throwing themselves out of apartment buildings and committing suicide. That's what drove the heat to them. But their answer was to put nets around the building, so when people threw themselves out of windows, that's true.
Lord.
That it would catch them.
Oh, jeez. What a solution. Oh, my God.
Terrible. But and these are all from articles I read. You can Google anything I'm saying here. But what they did is they got fed up with that, and what they did was they ordered 1 million robots to replace the workers. So here, 1 million robots are going to replace the workers at Foxconn, and this is where the lowest wage is. So what is this going to do to us? This is all, you can read these articles, everything I said about. So I think that, you know, everything is still okay here, but we have to look ahead, because otherwise we are going to end up as corporate slaves. We're going to end up as economic slaves to the corporations who run the robots, the artificial intelligence, the 3D printers. And so I think it's really important that we put programs in place to create a more loving, gentler world. I mean, this could be a boon to all of us, that a lot of repetitive, boring jobs are replaced by all these machines that we have built over time so that we can be freed up. I mean, I think that was the original reason for them. Not that they should be owned by a few and have power over the many, but it's share the wealth on a planetary scale. So this could be the beginning of education. So maybe the guy who's working at McDonald's, maybe he's a math genius, but we don't know it. Now, free education, and you know, like harvest the real wealth. That's our ideas, our potential. And so I'm looking forward to a better world. And once again, the guaranteed standard of living in place to shelter those who run into trouble because of the coming age.
All right. Well, I take what you say. By the way, I've been reading about this 3D thing. They've just come out with a 3D method of actually providing food. And the way it would work is you print your food. You will get these cartridges that would have, you know, the chemical concoction that would approximate, let's say, steak and string beans. And when you want a dinner of steak and string beans, you have your cartridge plugged in, and you print a cube of food, and that's where it's going to be going. Incredible. But thank you so much.
You're making me hungry, Utrecht.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Harvey. Michael from New Jersey. Hello.
Thank you, Utrecht, for having me on, and I always appreciate talking to you.
Same here.
I you know, there's a number of directions I could go, and there was an article today about the alarming decrease in education and humanities in the New York Times, which I thought is very interesting. That could be a whole discussion. And just the exploitation, taking away jobs. You know, people were talking about jobs, and my daughter is actually working in a medical facility intake, and she's doing it. She's not getting paid. She's an intern. And somebody could have that job, be making, you know, making a living wage, and this is going all over because people, the companies are exploiting kids that have to build their resumes, and they're not paying them, and other people who need money to feed a family don't, you know, they're taking their jobs. Of course, they're going to give it to an intern. So I think it's just an incredible exploitive whole system that we've got, and people know how to work the system, and they do that exploitation. But
well, I see in New York at least one good thing.
It's a legal thing, right?
Yes, has made an internship. You've got to pay interns, especially if they are performing the jobs of people who ordinarily, in that capacity, would be paid.
Well, I think that has to be go through because it's. It's really, you know, not that my daughter actually needs the income now, but somebody else is deprived of it. You know what I'm saying? More so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's just one problem. But, you know, getting back to Mr. Snowden, I think that, you know, whether he's, you know, right in the head or he's a narcissist or whatever that we were saying, I think that's what's important. I think he served an important function in that I was reading today in the paper that they broke it up, the national security, the electronic surveillance program, that they're building huge infrastructure for this. It's costing $56 billion. And to sort of hook into what Harvey was talking about, I just think that that $56 billion could have been so much better spent building up the welfare state instead of building the welfare state, which is inevitability if we're to survive. Instead of building the welfare state, we're building the national security state, which is guaranteeing you know, vast wealth for very few and a substandard, you know, insecure life for the many, many, many. So, I mean, $56 billion, we could wipe out poverty and hunger in children, for example. People, so many, there's some statistic about how much hunger there is in America, children going to bed hungry. $56 billion building this national security state to get everybody's information, spy on everybody, spy on ourselves, it's ridiculous. The amount of money that's wasted here is ridiculous. Yeah, a few people get jobs, like this fellow getting that didn't graduate high school, getting $200,000 a year. You know, I it's the inefficiency of that is creating havoc, you know, for everybody else. So I think what, you know, Harvey is pointing to, and I think that, you know, the facts are leading in that direction, but I think he doesn't see that, you know, human beings have to change a great deal. We can't just impose machines and things, because people identify with their knowledge and their belief, and they, you know, I mean, that's what people are. That's how they identify themselves socially, and we have to change immensely before we get to that point where we could you know, make that jump.
But, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, and going back to Harvey and some previous calls as well, this nation, the United States of America, has a prevailing philosophy that will never permit it, at least not anytime soon, to come to terms in a more humanistic way of functioning. The reason being, it does not see itself as part of the world community of anything. It sees itself as the dominant force in everything. And the spillover effect is, you know, that theory that we have of rugged individualism. You compete, you vanquish people, you are better than, you have to prevail over. All of these things that speak of dominance. And if you dominate, you therefore are the best. A lot of money is uselessly spent in being the best and in dominating and in being the world leader. That's what it's all about. It is a deeply ingrained philosophy. This is one of the striking characteristics of the United States.
But it's irrational.
It is not a country that is given to cooperation. It is a country that is hell-bent on domination. So when a country is formulated around this particular philosophy, you would find that it has to support it. And that philosophy will prevail over everything else. It will prevail over humanism. It will prevail over charity. It will prevail even over common sense. Common sense would tell you that you ought to invest in your human capital. That's common sense. But that's not the kind of common sense that prevails in a country where it is about the best of everything. At least they say the best. We don't get the best. For example, arguably the best are of Americans in Congress. We know that that's not true. Or the best of the Americans in the White House. We know that that's not true. But it's nonetheless a very essential philosophy that keeps this country going. And it is the prevailing philosophy since day one. We are the best. We are here to dominate everybody. We lead the world. We own the world. And the money is spent simply to shore up that false philosophy. And that is why we have these recurring cycles of battle over what people could clearly see is this the common sense route to go. It's the smart thing to do, to invest in your future, invest in your children, invest in taking care of people, a guaranteed income, all of that, a guaranteed standard of living. All these things are very sensible.
But look what they even did, Eutrice, with the word welfare. It has a negative connotation. But actually, if you can decondition yourself from that word, the word welfare is what could be a more beautiful word for society and for taking care of people. We have the welfare of the people. What could be higher than that? Actually, you're telling us what's higher. Power is higher than the welfare of the people. But they taken the word welfare and they connected it to, you know, this, you know, Mitt Romney kind of philosophy of just a predatory kind of philosophy, like you're suggesting. And welfare is a beautiful word. The welfare state is the is the greatest state. But people hear me say that and they say, oh, that's disgusting, the welfare state. You know, that what a future idea. But that is the highest idea. And
oh, I'm so sorry. Your phone
I'm sorry.
It's really cracking up, and I'm hearing only every other word. Are you there? Oh, gee. Michael? Oh, we lost him. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Dave from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello? Okay. Dave, last shot, are you there? All right. Then Sean from New York.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air, Sean.
Hi, Utrecht. How you doing?
Hello. Fine, thank you. And you?
I'm good.
Great.
You know, I want to piggyback off of what you discussed a few calls back regarding Brazil and the protest and us taking part in changing the government. You know, it bothers me that in other countries, as you stated, it seems like when they see the elites, meaning the government, bankers, whoever, getting ready to give them the shaft in some way, they take it to the streets. In other words, they protest en masse and make their voices known that they're not happy with this and they would like some form of change. And the other day when some Brazilian friends of mine sent me pictures on Facebook with the protests in all the numerous cities, a friend of mine replied on an email I sent out with those pictures. How is it that these guys in this country, in multiple cities at the same time, can have massive protests, and we can barely sustain one in one city? And, that was a very profound question to me. And I asked myself again, what is wrong with the American public? With everything that's happened from the 2008, you know, debacle, crash slash, you know, economic downturn, banks foreclosing on people illegally, they don't have the paperwork, so on and so forth. You know, subway fares being raised, tolls being raised. Nobody gets angry, and I just don't understand it. But yet, in other countries, they get angry. They notice, and they get angry. But here, nobody does everything. Everybody's very docile. We just take it with a grain of salt and keep it moving. And I just think with that kind of attitude, nothing will ever change. You know, and to your point where you said, okay, we should punish the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, whichever party you support, you're right. But nobody seems to want to make that change.
That's the issue. We protest from the comfort of a Barco lounger. You know,
mm-hmm.
and there are air conditioned living rooms. We don't want to do what we need to do. I mean, and by the way, these protests mm-hmm. are occurring in countries where, you know, governments are not at all afraid to bring out the military. I mean, these people are serious about what they're doing.
That's exactly right. You, in all of the countries you mentioned, you're right. The police and the military, they're not afraid to, quote-unquote, sick them on the general population when they protest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here, now granted, when Occupy Wall Street came on the scene and they were protesting, a lot of people didn't support it. Now, granted, it was a hodgepodge of different issues, but a lot of the issues spoke to some of the things I just talked about before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people didn't support it. The media, you know, didn't support it. The media basically said, oh, they're just hippies, they want freebies, blah, 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 blah. And when you get the media kind of programming the general public against protesting, then nobody thinks it's good to protest. And I just don't understand it. You know, I went to my doctor a couple weeks ago to get a shot for my allergies, and his wife, who's a nurse in the office, is Italian. And we were talking about all the same issues going on around the world. And when it got to the United States, she had a very disgusted look on her face and asked her, why are you so disgusted? She said, nobody here protests anything. She says, nobody here makes a stink about anything. She says, no matter what they do, the government, the elites, whoever can get away with whatever they want, and nobody makes a stink about it. And when you talk to people about it, they look at you like, you're crazy. What's wrong with you? Why do you want to protest? And I just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. This is the challenge. People want change, but they want the change made for them. And the change is made for them. They disagree with it, but that's what happens. If you relinquish control, if you signal to people in Congress, for example, yes, they'll do whatever it is they want to do, but you'll tolerate it. You'll put up with it, and you'll grumble, and you'll do whatever it is you're going to do, but you'll grumble, and you'll go ahead. Mm-hmm. Somehow or the other, you will just keep on doing whatever it is you do.
Right.
They get the message that they are free to do whatever it is they want to do.
Right.
And they do it.
Right.
So if they feel like giving $500 million to some company to conduct experiments to see how long it would take to make a poppy seed grow, that's what they will do.
Right.
And we continue to come back to the same point every time. The question is, when do we move off of box one?
Right.
When do we really get the point that there is just one way to get this done, and that is you just have to put some feet in the street and get this, surround Congress and tell them, listen, we are serious. You guys are going to go. We are making sure every single one of you, the changing of the guard, we've got to get you out of office. And I've said the same, especially, as the community that really confuses me is the African American and Latino communities. The party is just so disgustingly oppressive. And yet, year after year after year, what is their party affiliation? We are Democrats. Well, then suffer. After a while, you have to say that there could be no pity for you because you refuse to do what you need to do. I'm sorry, Sean.
To your point, what you just said, and I'll give you an example. I used to go down to Zuccotti Park and, talk with everybody in the park from Occupy Wall Street and, just get a feel for, what they're protesting, so on and so forth. And, it was funny. All my friends ridiculed me for supporting them, black friends. And I thought it was so profound because the very economic downturn that affected black people, which was the housing crisis, and so many black people were foreclosed from their homes due to this housing crisis and fraud, you would think the one thing they would support would be this movement talking against the very same thing that they're affected by. Mm-hmm. But no, they ridiculed it. They didn't support it. And like to your point with that, it was disgusting to see, wow, they're talking about the very same things that affect you, but you have no support for them. You think they're crazy. You think they're hippies. And again, and it goes back to your point, until people get really angry and want change and get in the streets, it's not going to occur. And funny thing is, in reading some of the articles coming out of Brazil today with regard to those protests, the government and the transportation authorities have decided not to hike the fares up. They've actually decided to back them down.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's my signal that I've got to go.
The protests were effective.
But thank you so much, Sean, for your calls. Thank you, Jerry, Sean from Brooklyn, and Sean from New York, Sarah from Dallas, Roman, Arkansas, Harvey from Berkeley, Michael, New Jersey, and Dave from Brooklyn. Thank you all for making this program so important today. We'll see each other again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thanks.